Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dollimore.
Welcome to the show, episode 933 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dollimore, joined today by the lovely, talented, scholarly Brittany Page.
So we asked people to guess on the last episode what it was that you called the man in Canada when you were at the Future Voters Summit on a panel and you were flying home.
Yeah, flying home.
And someone in the airport.
It wasn't at the panel at the Young Voters Summit that I called this gentleman this name.
It was during the panel. It was a kid who got up to ask a question. You just went on the attack.
Yeah.
So you were flying home, and there was a guy. Well, you just tell the story of happened.
And then I'll reveal what I called
him. Because we're going to go through what people guessed.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Do not reveal.
So I'm sitting at the airport bar having a conversation. I had just sat down and was having a conversation with the lady next to me. And she had some connection to Orange County. She's Canadian. And she had, and I said, oh, I used to live there. My wife and I moved to Washington, D.C. from Orange County a couple of years ago, 3 years ago or so. And we lived in Irvine, right in Katie Porter's district. Mm-hmm. And a guy who was not involved in the conversation, he wasn't sitting next to me. He wasn't sitting in the seat next to me, next to that seat. He was like five seats away. He aggressively screamed at me, raised his voice, Katie Porter is a hag. Mm-hmm. And I was very surprised. And I looked at her like, is this a joke? Do you know him? She was taken aback too. Mm-hmm. I said, excuse me? She's a hag. I said, well, thank you for your misogynistic interruption of this conversation that didn't involve you. And then there was a back and forth a little bit. And I said, you know, she was my congresswoman. I'm very fond of her. I don't care. I don't want to know her or whatever he said. Just nonsense. I don't know if he was already drunk. I don't know. And I wanted to shut it down with what I hoped would be the last word. So I said, you're, and then I called him a name.
Okay.
To which, by the way, he put his earbuds in, looked at me disgusted, and said, oh, nice. like I was out of line.
Yeah. Okay, so these were the guesses that we received on the episode, and these are Patreon supporters who did the guessing. So
yeah.
We have a guess here. Jesse called him a rat. This is a good guess because of the rat-focused nature of the show.
Ah, you dirty rat, see?
Yeah, that you always have rat on the mind.
Well, I said in the last episode that it was a word that I've said on the show before that you've forced us to edit out because it's aggressive.
I would take issue with your characters. I don't think you're remembering it correctly. Because I wouldn't necessarily take issue with the word being used on the show. Generally speaking, I think it had to have been the context.
Probably.
Yeah. So yeah.
It was in reference to Matt Walsh.
Uh-huh.
I still have the clip saved somewhere.
Nah, we don't. Let's not do any fact checking.
Let's go with more guesses.
All right. So we also have a guess here. Douchebag.
Was not douchebag.
Okay. We also have a guess here. And that would be hayseed.
It was not hayseed.
Okay. Googly-eyed feather duster.
Twas not that. that is reserved for Tucker Carlson.
Okay. This person says, I can see...
I was stalling because I pulled up the clip. The one that you said you didn't need a fact check on.
Huh. This person... I'm glad you're paying attention. And you're
I'm paying
really
attention.
Involved
no
in the
hayseed. It wasn't hayseed.
So this... We were on Googly Feather Duster.
Oh, Feather Duster. Feather Duster.
This person says, I can see Jesse, if he's annoyed enough, calling somebody a dickhead. Here's what I love about all these responses. It's people are like... They think you're going to be like, sir, excuse me, sir. That is unacceptable, sir.
Right. Well, it is strange. What I think it is people think that the person they listen to or watch on YouTube is a character. And that, well, he's only gets aggressive like that, like on YouTube. Mm-hmm. He's not going to call somebody a dipshit or get aggressive face to face with someone. That's not, oh, that wouldn't, he's too highbrow for that. That's only for the YouTube. That's just not the way it is.
We have another guest here. Dipshit.
Wasn't dipshit.
And with that, perhaps the lover of mothers.
Motherfucker, I think he means.
Yes.
They mean. And no, it was not motherfucker.
All
although,
right.
Certainly not above that.
Okay. And then we have a guest here from Bryant, Patreon supporter Bryant, who says, you used the C word, didn't you, Jesse?
That is correct.
Yeah.
What do we have for her, Johnny? Yeah, I...
Yeah, we should have made it a contest, actually.
I said, you're a cunt. And then he looked at me and put his earphones in and said, oh, nice.
Yes.
Well, what can I do? He's being a cunt. What am I going to do?
And so you texted me and another friend of ours, and...
I was shocked at what had just taken place. I'm like, how dare I call a cunt at the airport?
And the response that I had was, what was the woman's reaction next to you?
I checked in with her next to me. We were still continuing in conversation and did for at least an hour after that. I showed her the text from you, and she said, well, no, let your wife rest assured. I'm fine. He deserved every bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I trust that she wasn't just placating me. But listen, a lot of people are offended by the word. Totally get that. Not a word I use for women. But I have more of British sensibilities about the word.
So I also have the same sensibilities surrounding the word, even though you have like dug up whatever clip that you have. Who knows what it
for
says.
For you to pass judgment with your smarmy cunt blog, it's bullshit. No?
No.
Do you remember that?
Oh, my God.
And by the way,
that is very funny.
We're bleeping. That was about Matt Walsh and his smarmy blog. That never made the show.
Oh, my God.
We're bleeping it now because I understand people's sensibilities.
Yeah.
About the word.
Yeah. And I think if you're asking me if I remember that specific instance, I don't. But if I'm thinking back on why I had that response, I think it is just because people are generally like, I don't like all the cussing on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably,
a lot of people don't like
that's
that.
Probably the most common criticism that we get
is
please reduce the cussing on the show because people want to listen to it in the car.
Yeah, but that's true. But remember when we used to do the bell? Mm-hmm. I would ding the bell instead of cuss.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody complained, why are you not cursing?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And so a little bit of it is you can't win. But
yeah.
I think certainly, so anyway, to ensure that people are not getting angry at you for having used the word in a public space, I will just say that I have also used the word in a public space.
This is true.
Against,
in defense of people.
Yeah, against
like assholes at a bar.
Two men who were... physically touching women and also speaking in loud...
Calling women bitches.
And... loud, disparaging terms. And that didn't push me over the edge until I started seeing them touch people. And then I went over there and I had a talk with them. And...
I have never seen two dudes who thought they were alpha males look like deer in the headlights more than that moment, ever.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
And so, and this is kind of, it goes back to what we talked about on previous episodes. I don't know if it was the last episode or not, but that there's going to be people that are emboldened by Donald Trump's election that are going to be abusing people in public. And there's certain people that have a certain set of skills to deal with those people, and not even in a way that's
hang
like...
Hang on, I get Liam Neeson's calling me right now. I have to take this call.
And I'm not even talking about, like, you know... Here, I'll get into the whole thing. Okay, so when I was a kid, I was very unhinged. And I know that's shocking because of the way that I was raised. But
hashtag raised by wolves.
I was very aggressive. I was ready to fight. I was ready to, you know...
You were raised in that atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, we were told that if you got into a fight at school, you were never to hit someone first. But the moment that someone hit you... If you lose that fight, you're in trouble when you get home.
Right. So you face punishment not for fighting, but for losing a fight
right.
that was started by someone else.
Right. Yeah. And I was in wrestling when I was young. My mom took me to the boxing gym with her. Like, it was very important to my parents that we knew how to protect ourselves.
Also, a household that only pussies wear bicycle helmets.
That was what we were told. Yeah. And Band-Aids. So,
and Band-Aids.
So that's how I was raised, and, you know, it took me a while to unlearn that stuff.
Yeah.
And as an adult, you realize I can go to jail for behaving the way that my parents raised me, and they did go to jail for battery, and, you know, they were beating people's asses in public. So I never did that, right? I got my shit together when I was, you know, an early teenager headed to adulthood, so I've never been in a physical altercation as an adult. But when you are raised in that situation, you know how to approach things, and you know how to read people in a way that is going to prevent that kind of thing from happening. So I knew that those dudes that I walked up to that were physically assaulting people, that were calling women bitches, I knew that I was not going to have a problem going
right.
up to them
yeah.
just by watching them, just by seeing what was happening. I knew it was not going to be a problem. So I wasn't fearful in that moment, or I wasn't worried about it. If there was a situation where I was nervous about my physical safety, I might think twice. I might ask for backup. I might, you know, figure that out. But I'm never going to go up to someone and cause a problem for no reason. It's going to be about protecting other people. And I feel like, again, if there's people listening to this who are like, I totally understand what she's saying. There's people listening to this like, I have no idea what this is.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
not raised like this. I have, like, never stepped to somebody in public. I don't know what this is. And, like, good for you, honestly. But this is kind of what I'm talking about when I say, you know, if you have the ability to take up for people in public, I think it is important that we do so. And that guy will probably think twice, the guy at the airport, will
yeah.
probably think twice next time he wants to scream about how Katie Porter's a hag to some random person in the airport. He'll probably think twice, like, oh, am I going to get called out and this is going to be an uncomfortable situation? Those guys in the bar might think twice, right?
Yeah.
Next time they are loudly calling women bitches and then physically putting their hands on women who feel uncomfortable and just, you know, run away. They might think twice. Oh, are people noticing that I'm doing this? Are they going to come and call me out for it and embarrass
yeah.
me?
Yeah. Well, listen, I think there's not enough artful, skillful confrontation in public. I don't just mean fighting melee, but you see these videos. This intro segment's really going great long. I didn't expect us to get into this deep. You see these videos of, like, you know, the vertical videos of somebody taking it on a plane, and somebody's filming a dude in the seat behind a guy. There's a specific video in my brain. It's this guy sitting in his seat on an airplane, and a guy behind him, and not elderly, but, you know, middle-aged guy behind him, smashing his seat with his feet from behind, kicking, putting his feet up on the armrest of the guy in the front seat.
Like, just unhinged behavior.
Absolute. What are you doing? And the guy in front's pleading with him, stop, please stop.
And no one's doing anything.
Filming it, but
right.
nobody's stepping in.
Right.
Finally, the guy in front gets fed up, and he's a big dude, and he stands up, and he turns around and towers over the guy. I keep calling him little guy, but just the disparity in their sizes was so stark.
Right.
And when he towered over, it became very real for that dude in the back who'd never seemingly been confronted before. And I think there's a chance that that confrontation will make that fucking guy think twice. Like, oh shit, I almost got my head caved in the last time I behaved like this. I can't do that again.
Right, totally. Yeah, and so it isn't about like going through the world being antisocial, because that's what I believe. I mean, my parents were antisocial and they went through the world thinking that it was a dangerous place and that people were out to get them and that most people were bad and that they needed to protect themselves. And, you know, we can get into the psychoanalysis of why that was the case, but it was the case. And when you come from an environment like that, you learn that that's actually not how the world is, and that actually most people are good and most people aren't out to get you, and the world isn't a dangerous place. There is danger in the world,
yeah,
but that doesn't mean that you need to go out and be aggressive toward everybody and try to make people afraid of you and indicate to everyone that you are not someone to be messed with. No, you can just be a person that's existing, and if you happen to come across those kinds of people who are a threat, then you can deal with those people, but you don't need to treat everyone as though they're a threat.
Yeah.
And I think there is utility in filming these situations. We're going to talk about some of that today when that comes in handy. But, you know, it is important, I think, for people to be called out in these situations so that they can't abuse people,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I don't apologize. I think I did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But full stop.
Yeah. Well, he said it was nice of you to do what you did.
Yeah, he was, oh, nice. Thanks, dude.
So he thought it was
listen,
nice.
I mean, I was refrained. Jesse from a few years ago may have stood up and stepped up to him. And I don't mean like I'm stepping up, but I mean, let him know, look, I'm not just some average-sized, average-abilityed human being. You're not going to fuck with that. What you would have been what it was a few years ago. Now it's just a crossword across the bar.
Yeah.
Which worked.
Yeah.
Anyway, so thanks for your guesses, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for thinking I'm a far more decent person than I actually am. And who was it? Brian? Was that
Bryant?
Bryant?
Yes.
Bryant? Good guess.
Very good guess.
Fantastic.
So we are having a Patreon issue, by the way. So Patreon supporters get an ad-free version of the show, and in the last two episodes, apparently when I upload them to Patreon, it's not converting to the RSS feed so that people are able to access the ad-free version of the show in their podcatcher, the app that they use to listen to the show. I messaged Patreon about this,
man,
and it took them over a week to respond to me, and they said it looks like the issue has been resolved. The issue apparently has not been resolved, but I'm waiting to respond to them about that until I post this episode, this current episode.
Did I see an email from them asking, like, how did we do? You want to rate our service? Did I see that?
They asked me if the issue was resolved, and if it hasn't been resolved, to please respond to them.
Oh,
and if
okay.
It has been resolved, to rate the customer service. So again, I'm waiting to respond to them because I want to see if when I post this current episode, it works. So I would appreciate if, and I'm sorry to have to, you know, ask the Patreon supporters to help with this, but if you're not seeing this episode when it comes out in your RSS feed,
As the ad-free version,
please let me know, because then I need to respond to them and say, actually, guys, and see you in a week again before I get a response to this.
I thought you were going to say see you next Tuesday.
No, like, it's been very frustrating to deal with that.
Well,
so,
since we're here, we can ask people to support the show. You can go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast, and we can take a moment to thank our new Patreon supporters.
Yeah, so we want to thank our new Patreon supporters, Jack S.
Jack S.
A-T.
A-T.
Tessa N.
Tessa N.
Rob.
Rob.
Mike G.
Mike G.
And then we want to thank a couple of Patreon supporters who increased their pledge, and that would be Bear N.
Thank you.
And Paul L.
Paul L.
And let's just say Paul and Ashley L, because they are extremely generous, have been longtime supporters.
Would it be VL or just L?
Well, it just says L.
All right.
Trying to expose people's identities over here?
No.
Long-time
listeners, long-time supporters of the show,
yeah,
long-time generous supporters of the show.
Right.
Beautiful children.
Yes.
Their address is...
So thank you so much. We went a little long with our intro, so we're going to skip listener communication for today, but we will get to that next time because we have so much to get to today.
That's prick shit, bro. That's prick shit.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that. Your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Stalemocracy. Facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
Right back on track.
So we had a bit of a panic this week when the South Korean president attempted to institute martial law.
He didn't attempt to. He did it.
That's true. He did. Well, yes, he did. And then there was immediately chaos. People took to the streets.
The country collectively stood up and called that guy a
Yeah. How am I going to edit this episode?
I'm writing the time down right
okay,
now.
Okay, so the South Korean president instituted martial law. He did this at like 10 p.m. at night, 11 p.m. at night.
Yeah.
And I messaged a friend of mine who lives in Korea. And I was like, I just heard the news. What's going on? And when he woke up, apparently, in the morning, he's like, oh, I had no idea this happened. And by the time he had woken up, it was already reversed.
Right.
So, like, he just slept through the night while there were protests and the military was putting guns in the faces of legislators and they yeah. were grabbing the guns. And
members
like,
of their National Assembly or their Congress had to, like, climb the walls to get into the building to vote 190-0 to counteract the martial law declaration.
Yeah, so actually it's kind of inspiring what happened. I mean, I know it's scary and I know it's wrong what happened, what the president tried to do, but what happened after he made this announcement is kind of inspiring. And when you have this fear of what's going to happen in our country with Donald Trump and is he going to leave office, what's going to happen, it's inspiring to know that the country mobilized in the way that it did.
In Seoul tonight, they storm the institution they pledged to protect. Special forces soldiers acting under martial law fought with protesters and pushed back opposition politicians from entering parliament. Inside, the only thing that stops soldiers from the parliament floor, furniture deployed by opposition staffers. That allowed Parliament to vote down the martial law declaration 190-0, a step demanded not only by the leader of the opposition, who live-streamed himself jumping over the fence to get to Parliament, but also by the leader of Yoon's own party, who said, quote, the president's declaration of martial law is wrong. With our people, we will stop it. Afterwards, security forces rushed out of Parliament. Protesters celebrated a battle won, and Yoon revoked his own declaration.
I will accept the National Assembly's demand and lift martial law through a cabinet meeting.
6 hours earlier, Yoon, whose approval rating has been under 20% and who's resisted investigations into his wife, accused the opposition of being infiltrated by North Korea.
I declare martial law to eradicate the despicable pro-North Korean anti-state forces that are plundering the freedom and happiness of our people.
His decree prohibited all political activities, imposed government control over the media, and banned ongoing strikes by South Korean doctors. But thanks to immediate protests, it's not clear any of that actually happened.
A long, long time ago.
For the last 2 years, President Yoon has been a vital U.S. ally. Singing from the same Biden administration song sheet to advocate for global democracy and expand regional cooperation against North Korea and China. Behind the scenes, the U.S. wanted to see the crisis end.
We have every hope and expectation that any political disputes will be resolved peacefully and in accordance with the rule of law.
The senior U.S. official told me that some of Yoon's own advisors were, quote, shocked and humiliated by his declaration. And tonight, it appears Yoon could soon be impeached or forced to resign.
And they've already called for his impeachment hours after it took place.
Mm-hmm.
We could learn a lot from the patriots in South Korea.
Absolutely. And I forgot to say going into that clip, that was from PBS NewsHour, and that was reporter Nick Schifrin. So there was a really inspiring video of the protest, if people haven't seen it, of a lawmaker in South Korea fighting with a soldier. And she actually grabs his rifle.
Yeah.
And is screaming at him, "Aren't you embarrassed?" Like shaming him and like pushes the gun back and just like no fear.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Listen, we're in a situation where we could very well be facing just this type of thing. Martial law being declared. There was talk about Donald Trump declaring martial law after the 2020 election to try to stay in power, doing this exact thing until we get to the bottom of this stop the steal stuff. We could face this again. And I hope that we're not too complacent I hope we don't feel in America that we don't have to earn our democracy. We don't have to fight for the continuation of democracy in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of acting like Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski and acquiescing in advance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll be at the Capitol shoving Elizabeth Warren right over a fence.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, I will not obey in some anticipatory manner.
Yeah.
I will not do it.
And so there's a few things that are good about this. You know, the U.S. pressure certainly played a role in all of this. There was no hope that he had that the Biden administration would back what he was doing. So, but
because he's a lame duck, he's not going to be. It's just a power grab.
Yeah.
Power is just so intoxicating for people of this ilk,
mm-hmm.
who already have tendencies toward authoritarianism. It makes them drunk.
Yeah. But what also happened is that the opposition party worked with his party to undo this. They came together. So his own party was like, no, this is going too far.
Like in the few hours after the insurrection here,
right.
Republicans did. And then they snapped in line,
mm-hmm.
to back Donald Trump.
And that's what's scary, because if you do look back to after the insurrection, a lot of these Republicans came forward and they were directly blaming Donald Trump and saying this was his fault.
Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell.
And now they would never say that.
No.
And we're at a different place. So it makes you wonder, would these Republicans stand up for their country and stand against Donald Trump doing something like this? And it scares me, because I don't think we're at a place where they would do that.
It's amazing to me, too, because Republicans had a chance, and this is stuff we've already covered years ago, but they had a chance during the second impeachment in the Senate to not only convict Donald Trump for a clear attempt at overthrowing the United States government, but also prevent him from even being qualified to run for office again through the impeachment and conviction process. And they could have ended it and brought sanity back to their party, or what semblance of sanity they're able to function with. And they chose not to. They chose Donald Trump over the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we would love to know what you think about this. 657-464-7609, or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. This next story was sent to us from a longtime supporter, longtime listener, Isaac. And it is bananas, to use a word that Jesse uses all the time and that I don't think I've ever said in that context. So this is a CBS investigation, and they found that dozens of law enforcement leaders, sheriffs, captains, lieutenants, chiefs of police, have been buying and illegally selling firearms, even weapons of war, across 23 states, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C. And I'm going to read from the reporting. A nationwide review of government audits and court records over the last 20 years uncovered at least 50 cases of police illegally selling their weapons online through dealers.
Wow.
Out of their homes or the back of their cars.
Ugh.
In many cases, the weapons were sold to gun enthusiasts, often at steep markups, as high as 10 times what they were bought for.
Yeah, this is criminality.
In several cases, the guns wound up in the hands of violent felons and were used to commit crimes including drug trafficking, international arms dealing, and in one case, the fatal shooting of a 14-year-old boy attending a high school football game.
Wow.
So the key is that these weapons are usually deemed too dangerous to be on the street. So they're using their access to as law enforcement officials to gain access to things that otherwise wouldn't be on the market. They're saying we need this for our official duties to serve and protect, but actually they're secretly turning around
so
and they're selling.
They're buying them because they're law enforcement officials or they're requesting them. Tell me more.
It runs the gamut. So there were 50 cases all across the country and there were different ways they got it. Sometimes they stole it out of the inventory. Sometimes they were their issued weapons by the department. In the most egregious cases, they were battlefield weapons, and that requires them to go to federal regulators, ask for special permission to gain access to them. And just to give you a sense of what kind of weapons these could take out an armored tank. They could go through a building at the other side, hit a target 18 football fields away. They can take out a military helicopter. That's an example from a real case. We found an Iowa police chief in a three-person police department. Town was the population of less than 800. And he had requested over the course of 4 years 90 machine guns to get access to. He'd gotten approval. It took until he requested a Gatling-style machine gun that spewed 6,000 rounds a minute for federal regulators to say there's something fishy going on and starting to look into it. He's now serving a five-year prison sentence, but he's totally unremorseful about it. He just says it's a business. It's not illegal to sell things in this country, and he's appealing his sentence because he just doesn't think it's a crime.
Oh, this is a lot to take in, Aaron. And when I'm looking through all of this material, I'm seeing here that your team also uncovered social media posts where the buyers are talking about how they got the officers to sell weapons. Tell me more about that.
So when you're talking about machine guns, you do have to go to the federal regulation because there's been an outright ban in the United States since 1986. No one can have access to them. The one exception is official government use. So they go to federal regulators, but all you need is a letter. It's functionally a permission slip. A police chief signs a letter saying, I need this for department use. So there's literally do-it-yourself videos on social media explaining there's online web forums, and it just come down to relationships. There's some guys who said, I know a police chief, I know a sheriff, I know a SWAT guy. They just take turns signing these letters for me, and they make it like it's all for fun. Some of these guys just think it's fun to like literally mount it on an armored tank and just shoot it off into a field, and a lot of the guys is totally innocent, and that's what they do. But the problem is there are cases where they've ended up in the hands of criminals. So they've ended up with drug traffickers, they've ended up with arms dealers. There was a case where a police chief, a mayor, and a town... it was a member of the town council were trafficking guns and tactical gear to a Mexican cartel. There was a case just last year where they all ended up pleading guilty. It was two police chiefs, a sheriff, a Delta Force veteran, all conspiring together with a sanctioned Russian arms dealer, and they ended up in the hands of an international gun trafficker. Again, all of that ended up pleading guilty, so we know for sure that they were doing that. And then there was a case in the Northeast where it ended up being used in a fatal gang shooting of a 14-year-old boy who was just standing at a high school football game and accidentally got shot. So most of the cases don't end up in those egregious situations, but they certainly have and do, and these are law enforcement.
I will say, I was listening to that clip, and I feel like her tone is a little strange, and also her like emphasis on, now it isn't always these egregious situations, but it does happen. Like, you don't need to, you don't need to do that.
It's a benign propaganda.
Yeah, so that was reporter Aaron D. Gotchi from CBS News, because this is a CBS News investigation. But think of what you heard her say there, that cops are trafficking guns to Mexican cartels.
Yeah.
And then
Russian arms dealers.
Yeah, and then juxtapose that with what you constantly hear out of the Trump administration about the need to protect the border and the drugs coming in and the violence and the danger.
And cops are heroes.
And what about the cops playing a role in that? And the cops who are saying, hey, this is what you do in America. You sell guns illegally.
Not illegal to sell stuff. Yeah, well, how many drug dealers have you arrested for selling stuff?
And let's talk about him, because the Iowa police chief that she referenced in that clip is Bradley Went, and there's a population in this town of 794. It's Adair, Iowa. And this is what the reporting says. It seemed suspicious when its three-person police department asked regulators to buy 90 machine guns, including a Gatling-style minigun capable of shooting up to 6,000 rounds of ammunition every minute. Federal agents later discovered he was using his position to acquire weapons and sell them for personal profit. A jury convicted him earlier this year of conspiracy to defraud the United States, lying to federal law enforcement, and illegal possession of a machine gun. He's unapologetic and appealed his conviction. Quote, if I'm guilty of this, every cop in the nation is going to jail.
That sounds like a good start.
I mean, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
And these are the people that Donald Trump wants to continue qualified immunity and allow the discretion to shoot people they suspect of being shoplifters. Not anybody who's been arrested for,
right,
or convicted of, or arrest anything. Just kill them.
Right. And this goes back to what we were talking about at the top of the segment, where there's value in people filming things, because we're going to talk about another instance of bad police behavior, this time from Border Patrol. And this video is remarkable. I know this is, you know, an audio show. So
You're
not going to see the video, but you should. I mean, it's graphic. It's terrible to watch. But a Border Patrol agent sped up in his SUV, in their SUV. I don't know the gender of the driver. And smashed into a migrant at the border crossing. There was a group of migrants going over the wall, it looked like, at the border crossing.
A misdemeanor, by the way.
And they sped up, this Border Patrol agent sped up using their SUV and ran over a migrant.
Wow.
And the only reason we know about this is because there's a video, a cell phone video that was released, and now an investigation has been requested.
And if not, it would have been denied. There would have been excuses made. It would be false narratives would have been spun. But because we have evidence, video evidence,
right,
we're where we are.
Yes.
Tonight, the shocking video that has advocates asking for answers at the U.S. southern border. This video showing what appears to be a Border Patrol SUV striking a person at the border wall between Tijuana and San Ysidro, California. It's unclear what happened before the video begins, but the man manages to get back on his feet before the patrol returns.
All right, can we...
I know.
Can we fucking stop? We don't exactly know what the context was before... The Border Patrol person smashed his SUV into a human being.
Yeah,
maybe a person was trying to cross the border. Listen, maybe that person that got hit by the car was in possession of a Gatling gun that they bought from a particular sheriff that we won't name.
Right.
Maybe that's what it was.
Could be.
And apprehends the remaining individuals attempting to scale the border fence.
This is extremely egregious when you have a Border Patrol agent that is what looks like using his vehicle to cause harm to someone.
What did your organization do?
Our organization filed an inquiry requesting an investigation to this incident.
When asked about the video, U.S. Customs and Border Protection telling NBC News the incident is being reviewed. The video, coming to light just weeks ahead of a new administration, promising to secure the border and taking a hard line on immigration.
On day one, I will launch the largest deportation program in American history to get the criminals out.
For weeks, Democratic leaders and city officials have vowed to push back, threatening to retaliate with lawsuits, passing state legislation, and refusing to lend state authorities to enforce deportation efforts. while others, including New York City's Mayor Eric Adams, offering to work with the incoming administration. For months, he has said he opposes mass deportation, but has called for violent migrants to be deported.
Well, cancel me, because I'm going to protect the people of this city. And if you come into this country, in this city, and think you're going to harm innocent New Yorkers and innocent migrants and asylum seekers, this is not the mayor you want to be in the city under.
Adams adding he wants to sit down with the incoming Trump border czar.
I just been notified he wants to sit down and meet with me. I'm willing to meet with him.
Last month, Homan issuing this warning to any leaders defying his deportation plans.
And I'm sending a message for people that say they're going to get in our way. They're going to stop us from doing what we're doing on interior enforcement operation. I've said 100 times in the last week, don't cross that line.
Immigration lawyers and activists painting a picture of who some of the first targets of that deportation effort could be. The nearly 180,000 migrants wearing ankle monitors as their immigration status is sorted out. Experts say those losing their case and receiving a deportation order would be some of the easiest to locate, including this woman, Romina, who spoke with Noticias Telemundo.
Sí.
Saying, I am afraid because I can't be in Colombia, making reference to the danger she, like many others, say they now fear if they are returned to their home country.
And the Trump team hasn't shared any specific details on how the mass deportations would be executed, but the incoming border czar says that preparations are in place to make changes on day one.
So I know that that kind of went a lot of places in less than 3 minutes, because we started with the video of the Border Patrol SUV smashing into a human being, and then we proceeded to go through
Eric Adams and Tom Homan and
even Donald Trump talking about how we're gonna get the criminals out, quote unquote, get the criminals out, when again we just talked about all of these cops across the country that are buying and selling illegal guns that are ending up in the hands of drug traffickers and in the hands of the Mexican cartel. And when he talks about criminals, he's not talking about the cops that are abusing their power, that believe they're above the law, that think they aren't doing anything wrong because they're police officers.
They're willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the cop who smashed a human being with his SUV, but not willing to give the benefit of the doubt to migrants who are seeking asylum because of dangers politically or economically or whatever in their home country.
Right. And even Tom Homan, the incoming
mushmouth freak,
the incoming border czar, who is, you know, a very mean and evil man, it seems. He's so eager to work with New York City Mayor Eric Adams, who is on charge, brought up on charges of conspiracy to receive campaign donations from foreign nationals, the bribery, the campaign finance, conspiracy charges.
Under indictment.
I mean, is that, I mean, he's not officially a criminal, I guess, maybe, but, you know.
Presumed innocent, Brittany.
Yes, yes, yes. But again, also, but Donald Trump has been found guilty, or, you know, was up on multiple felony charges. And
Eric Adams has signaled his fascist, Christo-fascist bullshit intentions long ago. Just because he wears the name Democrat doesn't mean he's lives by Democratic Party principles.
Yeah, and all of this comes back to, again, with the SUV slamming into a person, is the dehumanization of migrants and where Donald Trump has taken the discourse, where a lot of these Border Patrol agents, similar to a lot of the people that we have working the police forces,
they feel emboldened, untouchable.
Right.
So untouchable they can sell 6,000 round a minute Gatling guns without fear of prosecution.
Do you think that this is the first time this guy has violated someone's rights, treated a migrant in a dehumanizing way, hurt them in a way that could have ended their life?
It would be a hell of a coincidence if the very first time he did just so happened to get caught on video.
Right, and that should outrage everyone. That someone in a position of power that walks around with a fucking gun is able to treat people like that. You should not be in a position to be protected from treating people in dehumanizing ways. It's disgusting. But Tom Homan, I mean, it starts at the top, and Tom Homan is this incoming border czar.
Former head of Border Patrol and ICE.
Yeah, horrifying. Absolutely horrifying.
Just a fucking angry dullard.
Remember, he's the guy who, during his 60 Minutes interview just a couple weeks ago, when the reporter asked him, what is the solution to, when you're talking about this mass deportation campaign, what is the solution to not separating families?
He said, it's easy. Of course you don't have to separate families when you deport. You just deport them all together,
right,
including American citizens.
Right, exactly.
That's what he said.
Yeah. So here he is, Tom Homan, the incoming border czar, on Fox News, giving a warning to the American people, similar to the one that you heard in that news package.
No, they can fail to help us. So get out of the way. We're doing it. You can sit there and watch. However, you can't cross the line. I've said it many times over the past 2 weeks. Title 8, United States Code 1324, Section 3, Triple I. It is a felony to knowingly harbor and conceal an illegal alien from immigration authorities. It's a felony to impede a law enforcement officer in the performance of their duties. Don't cross that line because there will be consequences. And thank God we got a strong attorney general coming in, Pam Bondi, and I will push those prosecutions. So you cannot help watch this, which I can't believe a mayor or a governor doesn't want to take public safety threats out of the community. You can sit there and watch us do it, but do not cross that line. There will be consequences.
I love when they list off U.S. code. Mm-hmm. A lot of U.S. code that's very important, including illegal retention of national security secrets, including fraud and defrauding the American people, inciting an insurrection, seditious conspiracy, all kinds of things that are against the law and that are felonies that they don't seem to give a shit about. I'm talking about Donald Trump's crimes.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, there's been all kinds of just unjust laws throughout history.
Right.
So, yeah, keep reading your codes and scaring us to death. There's unjust laws that people should not follow.
Yeah,
so.
It's called fascism, you fucking jerk off.
Yeah, and so keeping the tone here with Donald Trump's...
Fucking jerk off?
No. Well, yeah, with Donald Trump... Sorry, I had to think it through.
Pete Hegseth, everybody.
With Donald Trump's cabinet issues, because he's choosing people that are
the worst of the worst.
Well, that have been credibly accused of sexual assault. He's choosing people that have significant personal problems. And like, let's take Pete Hegseth, right? It sounds like the guy has numerous personal issues. One of them is, it seems to be a drinking problem. Sounds like he has an alcohol use disorder, and that's a bummer for him. I hope he gets help. I hope he gets treatment.
But it's also a potential danger for national security.
And yeah,
to be the Secretary of Defense and have to be carried out, not under your own power, out of events because you're so stumbly, bumbly, fucking puking drunk that you can't even contain yourself.
Yeah, and it's a problem, right? It's less of a problem if you're like the Fox News B-team host on Fox and Friends on the weekend.
Right.
It's not necessarily super crucial, I guess, that you're not engaging in that behavior. I mean, health-wise, obviously, we would prefer that you're healthy. But it is really important when you're going to be in a powerful position and there are countless lives that are under your control.
Yeah, and listen, we're not talking about Secretary of Labor or the Transportation Secretary. We're talking about the head of the Pentagon, the leader of the United States military, over the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Secretary of Defense, who very likely has to take calls at late in the middle of the night hours and needs to be sober-minded, literally and figuratively, to make decisions.
Yeah. So Pete Hegseth is another one of these characters, though, who has allied themselves with Donald Trump, and we're learning who in the past has been very critical of Donald Trump, and this is from CNN's K-File, Andrew Kaczynski, who is a fantastic reporter and is always digging this stuff up.
Yeah.
I don't know where he finds it, but
in this case, it was March of 2016 on Megyn Kelly's show.
Yeah, so this is Pete Hegseth talking about Trump.
It's typical Trump. All bluster, very little substance. He talks a tough game. But then when pressed on it, he's an armchair tough guy. I hate to say it. But this is a guy who said that John McCain is not a war hero, yet he sought his own 5 military deferments.
Armchair tough guy.
Ooh.
And draft dodger, ultimately, is what he's calling Donald Trump.
And Pete Hegseth served.
Yeah.
So he... is speaking from a position of having been in the military.
Yeah, he was rightfully outraged when Donald Trump said what he said about John McCain.
Right.
And now he just snapped in line because he's not a leader. He's a fucking follower. He's just, give me my order, sir. I'll do whatever you say.
It is wild to watch case after case after case of what power does to people.
Yeah, J.D. Vance. Yeah. America's Hitler, he called Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's remarkable. But Trump is now considering replacing Pete Hegseth with possibly Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
This morning, as Pentagon picked Pete Hegseth's nomination struggles, President-elect Trump...
What am I laughing at?
The way that he's speaking, the cadence, yeah. And the
come
tone.
On,
and
dude.
It's very official.
That's a traffic and weather to gather out the gates, everybody. Good times had by all. The wacky morning zoo. Honk, honk, honk. Here we go. Ron DeSantis reporting.
This morning, as Pentagon picked Pete Hegseth's nomination struggles, President-elect Trump is mulling other options.
One more time. This morning, the Pentagon pick of the Ron DeSantis is going to try to be the defense secretary for Donald Trump, everybody.
Do you know who that is?
No. Is that Peter Alexander?
Yeah, it's Peter Alexander from NBC News.
Pete, come on, bro. All right, now we'll actually play the clip.
This morning, as Pentagon pick Pete Hegseth's nomination struggles, President-elect Trump is mulling other options. Two sources familiar with the decision-making tell NBC News Trump is considering Florida governor and former GOP rival Ron DeSantis as a possible replacement, as well as Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, among others. Both DeSantis and the Trump transition team did not respond to our request for comment. But Hegseth's nomination appears to be in trouble. Multiple Republican sources tell NBC News that as many as 6 Senate Republicans are currently not comfortable supporting Hegseth's bid to lead the Pentagon. He can only afford to lose 3. A key Trump ally expressing hesitation.
Articles I've read, some of them are concerning. I don't know if it's true or not. But he'll go through the process.
Yesterday, new allegations of excessive drinking also emerging about the decorated combat veteran. NBC News spoke with 10 current and former Fox News employees who worked with Hegseth on one of the network's morning shows and say the former co-host drank in ways that concerned them. 2 saying on more than a dozen occasions they smelled alcohol on Hegseth before he went on air. Everyone would be talking about it behind the scenes, one of the former Fox employees said. Another former employee saying he should not be Secretary of Defense, adding his drinking should be disqualifying. A Trump transition spokesperson called the allegations disgusting, completely unfounded, and false. Fox News did not respond to requests for comment. Hegseth has denied an allegation of sexual assault from 2017. He was never charged with a crime. On Capitol Hill, Hegseth was also pressed about his recent comments that women should not serve in combat.
Do you think they should be in combat?
I think they're already in combat.
Some Republicans urging colleagues to reserve judgment.
I would just urge my Republican colleagues who are very worried before they make up their minds, let him have his hearing.
And Trump's team is expressing confidence in his pick.
There aren't any concerns, and we feel very good about his positioning for being confirmed by the Senate.
So it's not the only setback the Trump team is dealing with right now. President-elect Trump's choice to head the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, also backing out. Chad Chronister is his name. He pulled his name just days after Trump announced that he would nominate the Florida County Sheriff. He's from Hillsborough County. That's the Tampa area. Chronister ran into opposition from Trump's base for his strict enforcement of COVID lockdowns. But notably, Savannah Joe, with the recent withdrawal of Attorney General pick Matt Gaetz and now Hegseth's hurdles, the Trump transition team is hoping to avoid more distractions. They just finalized an agreement with the Justice Department to allow Trump's team to submit names for FBI background checks. Savannah.
You hear Lindsey Graham there? I don't know if it's true or not. Well, that's your fucking job, dude, is to find out.
Yeah, and you know, I did a video yesterday and someone called me and they left me a voicemail and they told me, hey, Brittany, you know, you're a very sweet girl and you... and you really should have ended your video talking about what people can do because people feel hopeless right now. And I was listening to this voicemail like, God, I'm just such a piece of shit. Like someone could call me and like say I'm like, you know, a stupid bitch or whatever. And I wouldn't feel as bad as I felt listening to this voicemail because I was like, I totally should have done that.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to use the opportunity right now to tell people you should be calling and pressuring people.
Yeah.
Because I know that it feels hopeless, but you need to be calling and pressuring your elected officials and saying, do not support these cabinet picks. Do not support Pete Hegseth. Do not support these people.
Yeah.
And that you still have a voice. You can still pressure them.
Yeah.
These few Republicans that are going to say no and have a spine. Like, there's so few of them. Keep the pressure up.
Yeah, listen, I'm not of the mind that every single nominee that Donald Trump puts forward should be rejected, because we don't want to force a situation where Donald Trump's just going to pick a recess appointment and put some fucking psycho in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if Ron DeSantis, they want to make him the fucking defense secretary, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Better than Pete Hegseth. Would it be good? No, it wouldn't be good.
Right.
But
less unhinged.
Yeah. And also
less.
And also, like we talked personally, privately yesterday, a guy who wants to have a future political career,
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump's going to be dead very soon.
Mm-hmm.
You don't survive to be deep into your 80s with Big Mac sauce coursing through your fucking veins instead of blood. People know. He wants to, I'm just saying, let's be, not, we don't have to be super judicious about who we decide no to, but Pete Hegseth is a clear no. A clear no.
Yeah, absolutely. So CNN's K-File dug up more audio. Yeah, dug up more audio. This time, Vivek Ramaswamy, who is going to be leading the Department of Government Efficiency with Elon Musk.
Did you see Doge in your mind?
I did.
And you just go with the acronym? Yeah.
I did, yes. And
it's a jackass idea to cut $2,000 billion from the federal budget. They're targeting the education department. Like, where else is this money going to? It's going to come from children, poor people, elderly people who need assistance are the ones who are going to pay. And it's being led by a department that has two department heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the best corporations have co-CEOs, Brittany.
Well, they're also always complaining. They're like, these unelected federal bureaucrats. Yeah. And it's like, what do you guys think you are?
I know.
What do you think you have just become?
Wow.
That's what you are now. So apparently, Vivek Ramaswamy is another one of these people who had very strong negative views about Elon Musk until power came along.
You have no reason to think of Elon. Don't jump like a circus monkey when Xi Jinping calls in the hour of need.
Elon Musk has, I think, demonstrated his willingness to change his political tunes based on the favors that he gets to be able to do business in China.
I do think it is a kinship that that Tim Cook and Elon Musk probably have, is that they both bend the knee to the true overlord, which is Xi Jinping.
Speaking of another guy who does the wacky morning zoo radio voice,
mm-hmm.
Vivek Ramaswamy, everybody. I don't like that Elon Musk. He's jumping high and jumping for joy for Xi Jinping.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
Yeah. So, again, these people who, you know, he's trying to call out Elon Musk for saying whatever he needs to say politically in order to be viewed favorably from China.
Yeah, but he's also telling the truth. It's clear, it's self-evident that that is what Elon Musk does. In the face of authoritarian governments, he will censor what goes on Twitter. But then in America, he's defiant because, no, I'm not going to do that. Because it suits him. It suits his business interest to do the things he does. It's not out of ideology. It's not out of principle.
Yeah, and well, Ramaswamy was right, but Ramaswamy is also talking about himself when he says that.
Right.
And his own sensibilities and his own approach to politics and values and principles.
Mm-hmm.
So disturbing all around. But you were just talking, Jesse, about how they are going to Republicans. They're looking at cutting essential safety net programs, Medicaid, Medicare, food stamps, Social Security, and we're getting more evidence of that with this clip of Representative Richard McCormick on with who's the Fox Business Network woman? Maria
Bartiromo.
Yes, yes, yes. So he's on with her talking about what some of these decisions are going to have to be.
The problem with the Democrats is they've never run out of things that they can give away for free, quote unquote. When you talk about $1 trillion in debt,
payment just on interest alone every year. We can't just talk about the military, though. The military can do some things better. We can save some money just in the way of contract. We can be careful that we don't decrease our abilities because China is right on our heels. However, if you talk about 75% of the budget, 75% is non-discretionary. We're going to have some hard decisions. We got to bring the Democrats in and talk about Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. There's hundreds of billions of dollars to be saved, and we know how to do it. We just have to have the stomach to actually take those challenges on. But we can't just talk about our discretionary budget. That's less than 25% of our budget. We have to have some real hard discussions.
Well, we talk about this all the time.
So they never want to touch the budget for the Department of Defense.
Nearly $1 trillion per year.
And constantly failing audits. Who knows where the money's going? Who knows what's happening?
It is hilarious to hear him talk about China being on our heels when we, the United States, spend more on defense than the next 8 or 9 countries, including China, combined. They're not on our fucking heels, Dick McCormick.
So, also, Donald Trump... So the big conversation that's happening right now is the 2017 Trump tax cuts are getting ready to expire and they need to be extended. And so Republicans are looking at how are they going to extend the Trump tax cuts since Trump is taking office again. They're obviously going to extend them, but they're going to cost $4 trillion. And I've actually seen an estimate out of the CBO. A new report came out yesterday that it's actually $4.6 trillion. But so $4+ trillion
over 10 years
to extend the 2017 Trump tax cuts, which overwhelmingly benefit the wealthy and corporations. And what they're looking at cutting is, like I said, Medicaid, food stamps, benefits for the elderly and people who have disabilities.
Yeah.
And we're talking tens of millions of people who are going to be losing health coverage, who are going to be losing access to necessary food aid.
Nearing 75 million people will be absolutely harmed by this.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about almost 8 million seniors and people with disabilities that are going to lose cash assistance because of the plans that they have for SSI. Like, it's
so
genuinely...
So that Elon Musk doesn't have as much of a tax burden.
Right. Yeah. They're going to offset the tax burden of rich people, shift that tax burden to the poor and working class, and cut safety net programs that benefit the poor.
Yeah.
And working, it's just disgusting.
While saying, oh, listen, well, there might be a little bit of nudge or tickle here we can do with the Pentagon, but well, look, it's what it is. It's too important. China's on our heels.
Right. And,
come on.
And all of this is, I don't know, because people refuse to, like, believe that they can't become Elon Musk, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're still buying into this idea that, like,
well, people are
rich
stupid.
People have their back, or
people believe they don't have, because the amount of money Elon Musk has is so fantastical. People don't have a concept in their brain of how far they are, how much distance there is between them and Elon Musk. Even millionaires, even a fucking millionaire, someone with $10 million. They can fight like hell and do everything they can, and they will never be as rich as Elon Musk. That's how much distance there is even between a person that wealthy and Elon Musk. He's worth what? $150,000 million? What? It's bananas money.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you don't have to tell me. I had a friend who was telling me recently about, like, I don't know, this, like, inheritance situation in their family, and I was like, I'm so lucky they don't have, like, a debtor's court for family members.
Right,
like,
right.
Like when your family dies and they come after you, because I would be in a very bad situation. It would not be good.
Yeah.
There is no hope of anything coming my way except for only bad things, if that was allowed.
Right. You inherit. What do we have for?
I know. Oh, my
God.
Crushing
debt for the rest of your life.
Yeah, on top of the existence. So, anyway. All right, so let's hear from Representative Jim McGovern, who I don't know anything about, by the way, but I saw a clip of him. He's a Democrat from
Massachusetts, I think, yeah.
And he was giving a speech at the Rules Committee. He's the Rules Committee ranking member. There was discussion of rules. I meant to look into what they were specifically talking about.
He's a pretty brilliant communicator. He's one of a few. There's a handful that really get it done and know how to talk to communicate broader ideas, and he's one of these people.
Yeah, yeah. So he specifically called out the Republican priorities, and I thought it was pretty masterful.
Facing American families. One of the speakers got up and complained that this is like deja vu all over again. I mean, they, the Republicans, are in charge, and they set the agenda around here. And these are their priority bills. This is what we're wasting time doing, their bills. We're talking about studies to inform kids about communism in schools rather than talking about things that are going to lower health care costs or lower food prices or help small businesses or do anything that's going to make any difference in the lives of average people in this country. I mean, they're talking about what bathrooms people should use instead of talking about grocery prices. I think one of them tweeted 326 times about bathrooms in a 72-hour period. I mean, these people are just strange. It is weird what's going on around here.
That person he's talking about that he's not naming because of these idiot fucking rules and their shyness about calling out their colleagues. It's Nancy fucking Mace.
The decorum.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love also that he mentions the thing about the communists teaching communism in class. Are we going to leave it to Republicans who call Democrats communist? Anything they don't like, they just call communist. They have no understanding of what communism is. Mm-hmm. Just everything's communism.
Yeah.
We get it. Right. Just like everything's woke.
Yeah.
Everything's CRT.
I know.
Fucking shut up.
Yeah, I don't know that the weird thing is going to continue to have any steam, though.
Yeah,
he
struggled with that one at the end there.
I think people are going to need to
come
up with...
They're strange. They're weird.
Yeah, let's come up with something else. And I mean that genuinely. We need to figure out how to get people to care about...
Oh, I thought you were going to... Well, what to call them. And I go, I have an idea.
Yeah,
Let's call them cunts.
I saw you getting excited. So, you know what? Let's just play the drop to just cover everything.
The views and opinions of Jesse Dolemore are solely those of Jesse Dolemore and do not reflect the views and opinions of Brittany Page, who is a far superior person and much more measured and reasonable in her views and analysis.
Just kind of a blanket one there.
Thanks, Hossie, for the drop. We appreciate that, brother.
All right, so...
I think we should end the show there.
No, we can't.
What?
Yes, because there was a SCOTUS case yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I do want to talk about this.
And I have had friends texting me, and they're like, I'm listening to the oral arguments. Are you listening? Because they expect me to be listening.
Your friends are nerds.
And I couldn't bring
fucking
my...
nerd friends.
I couldn't bring myself to listen to them until Wednesday. And that's because there was the case before the court about whether to uphold Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for minors. And it was a very important case. The oral arguments were over 2 hours, I think. And
is one of the reasons you couldn't listen to it because of the fact that Alito's voice just makes you want to punch yourself in the face?
Well, I listened to this one, but the previous ones I haven't been able to listen to because, yeah, I did turn it on and Alito started talking and I couldn't do it. I'm just like, I can't listen to that right now.
Hateful freak.
Him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying me.
No,
because
no.
Of my approach toward Alito.
No, Alito
like,
is a
really,
hateful freak.
That's pretty harsh, so let's see your Alito tattoo. But so it was an important
case.
It's
one of those portrait ones. It's really realistic looking.
Yeah, it's like when you order your dog portrait and they put him in like a fancy suit. You
yeah,
have him
that's
in, like,
exactly
a,
right.
Yeah, like a medieval getup or something.
No, I have him in a revolutionary general's outfit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that makes
real,
sense for him.
A real patriot.
Yeah, that makes sense for him.
What's the heaven one? Appeal to heaven. That's the banner underneath his photo, the tattoo I have of him.
Yeah. You can tell that was a planned bit. It went really smoothly.
It was not planned.
Yeah.
We don't do planned bits on the show.
I'm saying no one thinks that based on how that went. So, again, it was a very important case. And there were three Tennessee families in the Biden administration obviously challenging the ban. And it currently bans minors from having access to puberty blockers and medications to transition. So we're going to play a clip from a CNN chief Supreme Court analyst. This is Joan Biskupic talking about some of her takeaways. And she's going to play a clip from Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, which I think give us some important context for how the arguments went.
There was real conservative momentum on behalf of Tennessee. It looks like they're going to have a majority to uphold this Tennessee law and say that it is not sex discrimination to block this kind of gender-affirming treatment. I can explain a little bit about where the justices in the majority were, but I also want to mention right at the start the kind of anger and frustration that became evident from the three liberal justices when they could feel the whole thing moving in the opposite direction. For the justices who really want to vote with Tennessee, it seemed like what concerned them most is the fact that judges and justices shouldn't be making this decision. It's something that should be left to the legislative process. Justice Alito really complained a lot about what kinds of studies really show that this might be beneficial. He tried to poke holes in the Biden administration and the ACLU lawyers' cases about this, how this could help people. But let's see if we can hear from Chief Justice John Roberts and what he said about how they might not really be up to the task of looking at this kind of medical treatment.
Here, it seems to me that the medical issues are much more heavily involved than in many of the cases that you look to. And of course, we are not the best situated to address issues like that, unlike in, you know, like Morales and, you know, Craig Reborn and some of the other ones where it doesn't strike me that they're intensely affected by medical considerations. And if that's true, doesn't that make a stronger case for us to leave those determinations to the legislative bodies rather than try to determine them for ourselves?
Yeah, and I have to say that was the tone from the others on the right wing throughout. Justice Kavanaugh at one point said, well, who decides? Should it really be us deciding? I'll tell you, the one person we did not hear from at all during that entire 2.5 hour period was Neil Gorsuch. And it's important because Neil Gorsuch was the author of the one decision that the justices have already issued on transgender rights. And in that case, involving a statutory protection, not the Constitution as is issued at issue here, he wrote the opinion that said that in the workplace, transgender people should be protected from discrimination because it is based on sex. But he said nothing to either side. And obviously, it might not matter what he thinks because it looked like there was a sure majority to, as I say, vote for Tennessee. Some of the concerns that came from the liberals is just, you know, what's going to happen to some people who were already getting this treatment in Tennessee and not be able to complete the treatment? And Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, the first African-American woman on the court, did raise the question of, what about for all kinds of discrimination, all kinds of violations of the Equal Protection Clause? Are we going to be going backwards in that? So very gripping.
So the big assertion from the Biden administration and the three Tennessee families that are challenging the ban is that the ban is a violation of the Constitution's guarantee of equal protection. And a lot of what Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson brought up, which I really love Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson because I feel like she's the one justice that when you hear her questioning, you can really feel her passion. And this isn't just like an intellectual exercise. It's not just like an interesting argument that's happening. Like you feel every time Clarence Thomas talks, he almost has like a flat affect. You can't tell what he doesn't emote. You're not really able to tell what's going on there. Alito can turn into a dick sometimes. Sometimes you can get the tone and vibe for how he's feeling. Generally, they try to avoid being kind of emotional. Right. And I feel like you can really feel Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's passion. And I appreciate it because these are serious issues and
lives hang in the balance.
Absolutely. And she explicitly called out some of the logic of her fellow justices, her conservative justices that she's forced to work with.
We got there.
And used the case of like Loving versus Virginia.
Yeah.
Interracial marriage. And said that she's concerned about some of the logic that they're floating, that it could be used to undermine some of the bedrock principles that we have used to protect equal protection.
Which are already on the chopping block based on the overturning of Roe, where they talked about rolling back protections for contraception, for gay marriage, for interracial marriage even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's genuinely scary. And it's also interesting to hear Chief Justice John Roberts say that, you know, basically there's limits to their ability to look at some of these medical issues And
really weird.
Yeah. His logic being that because there are some of those limitations that they aren't necessarily up to looking into these medical issues so deeply, their solution to that is to then just let the states handle it.
Yeah.
And
like, they're way better equipped at the state level legislatures. Why would they be more equipped?
Yeah. So it's just, it's disturbing all around, but I really did appreciate listening to the arguments, because obviously Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar is mm-hmm. awesome and a boss.
Idahoan?
Yes, she is from Idaho. And also there was an ACLU attorney who was arguing with Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar, and they are the first known transgender person to argue before the court.
Yeah.
Chase Strangio. And so that's a remarkable thing. But also the whole time that I was listening to Chase, the attorney, argue, I was standing there thinking, like, imagine arguing before the court and having to talk to someone like Samuel Alito.
Yeah.
Knowing what his position is on your life.
Your existence.
Yeah. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll wait to see what happens in June to all of our rights.
It doesn't look good, though. It does not look good, this particular decision from the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Because it's a 6-3 Supreme Court filled with just hateful Christo-fascist freaks.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to leave you there. We invite your participation in this conversation. You can call 657-464-7609. Leave a fewer than 3-minute voicemail, not a series of 3-minute voicemails. You can also email a regular old-fashioned email, or email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollamore.com. We would invite you to help support the show. Patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. For as little as $2 a month, you can help produce this show and help us move the conversation forward on an episode-by-episode basis. We love you. We appreciate you. This is the Wacky Morning Zoo signing off, everybody. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore. And this has been I Doubt.
Best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.